So this morning, as my family is wont to do, we get here pretty early on Sundays. We leave our house around 7:30, and we always stop at Einstein's Bagel because it's on our way, and it's easy and quick. And there's a gentleman named Vladimir who manages that store, and he's there every Sunday, and we've gotten to know him through the years. And he wished us Happy Easter today, and I said, "Oh, do you celebrate Easter?" Because I thought he was Greek and that he might be celebrating it next week. And he said, "I'm Jewish, but I couldn't celebrate my religion growing up. I grew up in Russia, and we were not allowed. No one could have a religion there." And I thought, and so he said, "Oh, so you can call me a bad Jew." And I thought to myself as he said that it wasn't being a bad Jew; it was not being allowed to worship your own religion. And I thought, how fortunate and how lucky we are in this country. That and in this church in particular, that we can come together and hold our own faith beliefs in complete and utter acceptance. And I just thought that was a real eye opener. We take this place for granted a lot. And since it is Easter today, but it also is Passover, and Passover is a Jewish holiday, I thought I'd tell you just a little bit about it. Hold on one sec. First of all, does anyone know how long Passover has been celebrated? Any guesses? Wait, you were here first service, so you can't guess. What? Exactly right. Very good, Jane. So Passover has been celebrated for more than 3,000 years. The holiday begins on the 15th of the Hebrew month of Nisan, and I'm not sure if I'm saying that right, usually in April. It's called Pesach, or Passover, because the angel of death passed over the Israelites' houses. Part of the history of the Jewish people is that they came to Egypt needing a place to stay, and instead of being welcomed, they were enslaved. And Moses tried to speak up for the Israelites and said, let me go, let our people go. And they wouldn't. So the story has it that God came and sent 10 plagues. And one of them was that the firstborn son of every household was going to be killed, except for those that were of Israeli blood, because they left a special symbol. And I'm not going to get into a lot of details because we do have young children here. But Passover is a holiday, especially for children, for it said in the holy books, "You shall tell your children the story of Passover." The Seder is a traditional meal eaten on the first and second nights of Passover. Friends, family, and even the littlest children gather together to tell and remember the miracles that their God performed for his people. The Seder plate is put on the table, and that's a special Seder meal. And while they're eating dinner, or right at the end of dinner, the youngest child, it's always the youngest child, asks the first of four questions. And if you were to walk into any Jewish household throughout the world, they would be asking the same questions. And what the first question is, why is this night different from all other nights? Why on this night do we eat only matzah? And if you're not sure what matzah is, it's kind of a cracker. It's an unleavened bread. And the reason that they eat that is we eat matzah to remember that our ancestors, in their haste to leave Egypt, could not wait for the bread to rise. So they just grabbed the bread that they had, which was unrisen bread, called matzah. And so every Passover, they eat that in remembrance. Why on this night do we eat only bitter herbs is the second question. We eat bitter herbs to remember the bitterness of slavery. On all other nights, we do not even dip once. Why on this night do we dip twice is the third question. We dip greens in salt water to replace tears with thankfulness, and we dip bitter herbs in hariset, which is a sweet fruit mixture, because the bitterness of slavery was sweetened by God's rescue. And the very last question, why on this night do we eat reclining? And reclining, if you're not sure what that word means, it's kind of like lying down or being very relaxed and sitting in a relaxed way. And the reason that they ask that question and do this, on this night we show our freedom by reclining. In ancient Egypt, only free men could do this. So that's just a little tiny bit about Passover. Passover has many, many traditions and is a very, very important holiday in the Jewish tradition. And I wish happy Passover to those of you that are celebrating that holiday today. And I think it goes on for several days. I believe this is the first day of Passover. And at this time, we are going to go to religious education. And Kyla is going to carry our lantern for us. So Kyla, you can come on forward. And your sister can come with you, or your brother if you want. And anyone of the youth that want to help.
These are words for meditation by Elizabeth Tarbox, which will be followed by a time for silent prayer or meditation. The ducks came again this year. I like to think it is nature's way of making amends for the spring rain that floods our yard. It is a gift for Easter. When the fruit trees start to sneeze and the pile of snow thrown from impatient shovels melts down, the mallards come and make of our yard a sanctuary. They swim about and learn soon enough that this is a temporary pond that is too close to the highway for raising young, that there are energetic, impolite dogs in the neighborhood who see everything as a sporting event. The ducks know they cannot stay. But for a week or two, they are there in the morning when we shuffle out with our bread offering. They swim with grace through the tall grass still showing above the water. They fly up suddenly and make our yard seem like a primordial lake from which the very birth of life has sprung. And then they leave. Yesterday, as I watched the ducks make a turn around the diminishing pond, then took off with a whooshing of wings freed from the clasp of gravity and flew around above my head while I murmured, "Please stay a little while." Easter is an exercise in letting go. It is a reminder that life is precious and fragile, beautiful and impermanent. It is a reminder that love is a gift of immense proportions, that if we have shared it for even so fleeting a moment as the time it takes for a pair of mallards to sanctify our pond, or dawn to come to a grieving woman who watches by a tomb, then love has touched us all, and we will never be the same again. This reading by Joshua Mason Paul-Alec is modeled after the Howard Thurman reading that I used on Christmas Eve and many other ministers use as well to end Christmas Eve services, which talks about after the angels have gone and after everything is still and quiet, then the work of Christmas begins. So this is titled, After He Is Risen. After the hosannas have all been shouted, after anguished moments in the garden have been spent, after take this bread and eat, take this wine and drink, after betrayal with a kiss, after hands washed and 39 lashes, after 7 last words and he breathed his last, after crucifixion and death, after laying the body in the tomb, after rolling away the stone, after proclamations of he is risen, now let us rise. Now let us awaken to a new dawn, a new day. Let us remake the world with the hope of Easter. Let us free the prisoners, house the homeless, educate the children, offer gainful work to all who are willing and able to work, protect soil, water, air, and food, end all forms of state-sanctioned violence. Now may we awaken and stay woke. Now may we rise and stay risen. Amen, and blessed be. Well, look at that. If I didn't preach at all, we would end on time. I'm gonna preach. Welcome. Welcome to Easter morning, Unitarian Universalist style. Welcome to this house of faith and doubt, this place where we celebrate the Christ of faith, the Jesus of history, the pagan roots of Easter, the earth, and the turning seasons of it. Welcome whether you come here with belief in the risen Christ, or you believe that Jesus wasn't really dead when they buried him, or you believe that the resurrection was a metaphor and not reality, or you believe that the Gospels were a product of mass hysteria, or you believe that it was a sexist rewriting of earlier goddess stories. Whatever theology you come from today to this house, we come from these diverse places to come together and celebrate Easter. You are welcome here. In a reading titled Blessing the Blend, UU minister Jane Rainey Zepka writes, Every year, I fight the feeling that our UU churches just can't win on Easter. Our familiar congregation will come through the doors alongside a number of Easter visitors we've never seen before. Why do they come? To hear familiar traditional Easter music. To not hear familiar traditional Easter music. To be reminded of the newness of spring, the pagan symbols of the season, and the lengthening days without a lot of talk about Jesus and resurrection. To be reminded of Jesus and his resurrection without a lot of talk about the newness of spring, the pagan symbols of the season, and the lengthening days. To participate in a family service where children delight in discovering the many roots of our religious tradition. To participate in a dignified service where the adults celebrate the undeniably Christian holiday, Easter. We each have religious stories, spring dreams, seasonal occasions. And on Easter, she says, they're with us, joining together in church. It is our glorious celebration. And by continuing, considering the blend a blessing, we win every time. I agree with Jane Jepka. Our theological diversity is something we celebrate. And we celebrate it particularly at Easter. Easter has always been a palimpsest of a holiday that is layered onto layers of other holidays that came before it. But this Easter, which falls during Passover and the day before Earth Day, it feels particularly so. My own perspective on Easter is that for me, what's important isn't the question of what is historically true, but why the story is so meaningful. Why this layer upon layer of stories has become Easter is so important. And I think the answer isn't about a pathway to salvation, but the path of the human soul. Theologians talk about two different Jesuses sometimes. It's a distinction that was made by theologian Martin Kollar over 100 years ago. And they talk about the Jesus of history and the Christ of faith, the Jesus that lived and died, and the Christ that died to save us all. While I find that distinction interesting and meaningful, I want to talk about a third Jesus today. That beyond the historical Jesus and beyond the question of salvation and the Christ of salvation, there's a Jesus of metaphor and story, a Jesus whose life as story has something to teach us about our own lives, our loves, our needs, our drives, the deepest yearnings of our souls. It's the Jesus of story, where the story is written on top of earlier stories, bringing unto and up through them the themes of resurrection. Not because we need them for our salvation, but because we do need stories of rebirth for our spirits. For this Jesus, I need you to set aside atheism and the insistence that resurrection from death didn't happen. And we need to set aside the literal resurrection and belief in it, and enter into a realm of metaphor and say, what does this story teach us? I said the gospel is a palimpsest, layers upon layers of stories where we can see the older stories peeking through, and we can see Ostara, the pagan goddess. We can see Persephone, the goddess who ate some pomegranate seeds and had to spend part of each year in the underworld. Other classical myths like Orpheus and Eurydice poke through. An ancient Sumerian myth of Inanna, who descended into the underworld to retrieve her lover there and return back from the dead. The story of the phoenix that gives birth and rises from its own ashes. The story of triumph over death is as old as life itself. And so we keep retelling this story because it's so powerful. I think we tell it right now because we need it as we watch a dying earth around us. We need to know that there is some kind of hope that life can be born again, that this earth can recover and continue. And so we keep retelling the story, and herein lies spoilers. But the theme from coming back from the dead can be found throughout modern culture, from Harry Potter to Buffy the Vampire Slayer to Jon Snow, all of them savior figures. And why do we keep telling this story, culture after culture, generation after generation? because it is a deep, powerful truth or yearning. It speaks to us just as much as it did to the ancient Jews and the ancient Romans. It's a story that, yes, it's the story of the earth itself, the story of spring, rolling back the stone to find life after death. It speaks to our yearning for spring after winter, it speaks to our yearning now with a dying earth of bringing it back to life again. It spoke to people of ancient times as well, just as the ancient pagan festivals before it, such as Imbolc or St. Bridget's Day, on which people placed candles in caves to light their way out of the darkness. I don't know if the Gospels are literally true and if the women came to the tomb, but I can imagine that they did. And they can imagine if they did, they felt some kind of impossible hope, a hope in the face of death, not hope for a literal resurrection when they came there, but hope for something that went beyond reason, for some sign of life after death. Harvard professor and theologian Cornel West talks about hope as not the same as optimism. He says, it's not optimism. I'm in no way an optimist because I've been black in America for 39 years. This was written a few decades ago. No ground for optimism here, given the progress and regress and three steps forward and four steps backward. Optimism is a notion that there's sufficient evidence that would allow us to infer that if we keep doing what we're doing, things will get better. I don't believe in that. I'm a prisoner of hope, and that's something else. The Reverend Jeremiah Wright, in his famous sermon, Audacity to Hope, that inspired Barack Obama's words in his book, Audacity of Hope, said, Wright said, but to have the audacity of hope when that love is not evidence, you don't know where that somewhere is that my grandmother sang about, or if there will ever be that brighter day. That is the true test of faith. So I imagine if there were women who came to a tomb where one they loved and followed, one who was their leader, was buried, and they had despair, but they also hopefully had some hope. They had a hope that came from old stories, from Inanna, from Persephone. They had a hope that comes with the strength that we get from the earth, that after every death, there is a season of rebirth. They couldn't have expected a stone to be rolled away, but they could expect that after death, there is some sign of life again. The story of the crucifixion speaks to us of loss and of letting go, of the need we have to let go of grief, of sorrow, of fear, of hurt, of wrongs of the past, of this dying earth. And then the story of rolling away the stone speaks to us of opening ourselves up to possibility of hope beyond optimism, hope beyond faith, that something can happen, something unexpected and joyful, something even miraculous. It's easy for us to have hope that the spring will follow after winter. It's not as easy to have hope that we can turn back climate change. It's not as easy to have hope when our lives are full of despair, when we're alone or afraid. But if we approach the Easter story as the story of the historical Jesus, it gives us nothing. And if we approach it as a story of the Christ of faith, it gives us salvation. But it still doesn't answer, I think, what is answered by the Jesus of story, of metaphor, which is that there is hope. It's the story that teaches us of going to the tomb when there's no hope left, rolling back the stone. Whether or not that's the historical truth that the earth witnessed, whether or not you have faith it is true, it is true in this way, that we know it from Persephone, from the groundhog, from Inanna, from St. Bridget, from the very earth itself, and yes, from Jesus on Easter morning. Life will return. Hope will return. After the sorrow, after the pain, after the darkness, there is a dawning. And so, happy Easter. Happy dawning of hope from whatever the dark places of your life are. Happy possibility of spring, renewal of life, renewal of the earth. Happy birth of spring and resurrection of plant life. Holiday born of a hope that wouldn't die. Happy Easter. And hallelujah.